he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt, get me out and be the biggest little flirt.
Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And this is the Shame-Free Zone. With me tonight is Mr. Science. I met Mr. Science in Corvallis, Oregon, about a year ago. I was presenting up there. And that's actually my alma mater. I went to Oregon State University from 1978 to 1982 and graduated with a degree in psychology. So, Mr. Science is actually Sean Bundy, and he's got an MS in science education. He's got kind of an interesting pairing of topics here. He's actually teaching his students about human sexuality and global warming. And you can actually visit his website. Got a really cool name. It's www.spermbrain.com. Yes, that's right. You heard that right. Spermbrain.com. So maybe you want to go on over there and tweet it to your friends, and check it out. There's actually a survey there that you can take while you're listening to us to this evening. It might be kind of fun. Sean, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thanks very much, Veronica. It's great to be here.
Glad to have you here. Now, are you in Oregon today?
I am. Yep, yeah. I'm in Oregon. I moved up from Corvallis to the Portland area last year, and loving Portland. I love Oregon. I've been out here about 12 years, moved out here from Minnesota to go to grad school at Oregon State, the same place that you did your undergrad. So got my teaching degree there about 10 years ago or so.
Well, now are you going to come to the EcoSex Symposium in Portland this weekend?
I might. It sounds a little bit intimidating, though. I'm not sure.
Oh, come on. We haven't intimidated the Mr. Mr. Science.
Well, I looked over the pairings, and it looks like quite a time, that's for sure.
Yeah, we've got.
What are you presenting on again?
I'm going to be talking about a child's first love, which is going to be about basically how our relationships with pets, especially the early ones from our childhood, but how we relate to animals, can have an effect on our sex life.
That's cool. So
yeah.
What are your...
not exactly an area that's talked about that much.
Yeah, I like that. That's pretty interesting, especially from knowing different people and thinking about how they relate to animals and thinking, yeah, that's definitely an interesting... I'll be curious to learn more about that for sure. I might have to check that out.
Oh, I hope you show up. Definitely. And then I'm also doing one about nature's prescription for peace. I think there are a lot of wonderful, peaceful ways of handling conflict and living in community that are reflected in nature that we don't get exposed to much because we're so busy trying to find models that support what the humans have done. I was thinking about that today because I looked out my window and I saw three bucks, and these are beautiful, beautiful.
Wow.
Large. They've got the, you know, the velvet on their horns, and they're not young because it looks like they're both, all three of them are probably going to be 4 points. So,
wow.
They've been around for a few years, and they travel together. And I thought, you know, by the time they get ready to knock the velvet off of those antlers, they're probably going to do a little bit of competing for female attention. But one day I actually saw three bucks doing that, you know, in a field alongside a road. And it was strangely homoerotic.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of getting sexually aroused while they were jousting each other, And I didn't see any animosity. Nobody got hurt. They were definitely testing their prowess and their strength and matching each other. And I'm sure that one way or the other, they were going to sort out who had, you know, breeding rights with the harem. But it's just,
I've heard that's fairly common with a lot of different animal species, especially some of the in the deer family. So I'm not too surprised, actually.
The part that's surprising, Sean, is not that they were competing; it's that they were doing it in a friendly and
way. No, I think that part definitely there's that side of it too, that a lot of people who spent time on the biological side have been kind of shocked by that, and I think that got ignored a lot initially. They just sort of passed it off as, oh, they're just competing, and that the piece that you're talking about was left out a lot of times of, oh, they don't actually look like they're miserable while they're competing or while they're being aroused by each other. We'll just ignore that.
Why this deer has an erection if he's so pissed off?
Exactly. Oh, I didn't see that. That's not really happening. So, yeah, that's definitely been talked about a little more recently. But that's interesting. So, you're not in Oregon yet for the conference?
I don't head up until Thursday. I'll head up Thursday, and I'll be there in time for the Friday night festivities.
Nice.
Start.
Sounds
right, we'll have our. Actually, Annie Sprinkle, a good friend and mentor of mine, going to be won't be there, but she'll be there with her wife Beth through Skype.
Oh, nice!
So, that's only fitting, since she coined the term ecosex.
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't know that.
I'm not sure she would agree with that. She'd probably.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to say she popularized it because she's always correcting me.
That's what a good mentor does, right?
That's true. So tell me, how did you get the name Mr. Science?
Basically, since I teach in the public schools, I was just looking for, and I teach science. I teach biology and integrated science, so freshman and sophomore science. And I guess I get some upper-level kids in there as well. But I was just looking for a name that was sort of fit along with my background, which is teaching science. It was not teaching sex. And then I got into this because I realized everybody's sort of cluelessness with teaching it, because I was doing the reproductive system in middle school years ago, and the kids would ask all these crazy questions, and I'd try to answer them for them on the last day with these anonymous questions, and I'd save them. And from year to year, I'd gathered more and more questions, and then I was like, well, why are these kids so clueless about this stuff? And then I'd get my colleagues would come in, and they'd be like, well, what are the questions this year? And, you know, first they wanted a joke, and then the second thing they'd do would be like, well, what's the answer to that? And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, okay, that's why nobody understands this stuff, because nobody's been taught, including, like, the people that are 20 years older than me, which is really weird. So I got into it on the science side of things, and I still feel like I'm a science teacher, and so that's where the name comes from. It came along with the website when I started writing a book, and that's where the website came from. And the website's
I'm just surprised with this sperm brain, sex your brain. It's interesting that you got Mr. Science. I'm surprised it's not Mr. Sex.
Yeah, well, it could be, I suppose, but that's probably a little more racy than I would go for my background, so the original title, the website title, comes from "Do sperm have brains?" which was one of my favorite questions that the kids asked me, which I thought was
have brains?
A very clever. Because how do they get to fertilize the egg? I mean, it's a long trip, like, right, with all the different passages, and how do they know, like, where to get to? So there was this sort of childish questions, yet they always had kind of a deeper layer if you peel them back, and it was kind of intriguing to me.
Well, you got some intriguing stuff on your website here. I just took the astounding animal nipples sex trivia question.
Yeah, there's some funny trivia on there.
Well,
how'd you do?
I didn't know that possums have a bullseye for their nipples are arranged 12 in a circle with one in the center.
That's a strange one, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the platypus doesn't have nipples. They just seep milk through its skin.
Yeah, that's another odd one. It's true.
Where do you get this trivia, by the way?
I looked up a lot of it. I made sort of trivia games that were for my book like 3 years ago. And so I compiled a lot of these questions, and then I made sort of like a quiz or something fun to sort of keep the readers interactive. And so a lot of them are from that, and just tried to use a lot of the scientific information that's out there. And there's a lot of people studying some weird stuff, and it's fun to pull some of it from some of the technical journals and put it into more of a usable format for people that they could find amusing, and maybe they'll learn a little bit more about how these things work so that they can be happier in their sex lives.
Certainly more fun. I mean, you've definitely got a fun, humorous approach to this. Has it ever been in conflict with, like, being a professor? Is that ever
It hasn't been an issue at the school that I work at currently. They are super supportive, certainly. But it is interesting to sort of, I mean, I think that's why I went with the name Mr. Science and not my given name. Obviously, if you Google my name, you can certainly figure out that I write for SpermBrain.com. So it's not like it's a huge mystery. But no, it hasn't been too much of a conflict. But I do think sex is a touchy topic, and it is, you know, when I was applying for jobs and stuff a couple of years ago, it was definitely like, well, I don't really want to be like, hey, I'm the guy that runs this Sperm Brain website, like, if you're looking for a teacher. So I think it is a tough topic, even if you're approaching it from the science side. It's a difficult topic, as I'm sure you've figured out in your career of doing, you know, many different things and trying to approach this topic from a professional level.
Well, not even down that road, Sean. It's a long story. But tell us about your book. What's the name of it, first of all?
The book I was writing and been working on it for a while was Do Sperm Have Brains? And it was based around, the questions that all the middle schoolers asked me. And I guess I thought that I could answer them all. And so I saved them and came back the next year and had them, you know, saved them and tried to go through them during the class. And then they asked me 50 new ones. And eventually over, you know, 3 or 4 years, I had like 200 of these things. And they're all different. And as I'm sure you've done sex education stuff, and you're sort of startled by the diversity and the different. And so I thought, well, as many people have, I'll write a book about this and do something fun with it. And so started the website based around that to get a platform. And the book was is about half to two-thirds finished, and I was working on marketing it, and the publishing industry was struggling a couple years ago, and still is. So I then tried to decide whether or not I'd self-publish it, and so right now it's just sort of in limbo, trying to figure out what I'm going to do with it I move forward.
Now, I try CreateSpace. Amazon's got something called CreateSpace. That's what I'm doing. Publisher for my first book and had an agent and everything, but the game is changing a little bit now, so I'm going to try self-publishing.
Cool.
I'm over here. I just retweeted your tweet about our show tonight, and you've got a posting on your blog here. And did you get questions from?
Well, I have a whole list of questions that haven't been answered, and I haven't gotten any more today. But I certainly have a whole plethora of questions for you that we can talk about together, or I can ask you, or however you want. I have, probably about
a little bit of both. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, well, they're always entertaining, and I don't usually get a chance. I've been working so much teaching this year that I don't always get a chance to refer to them all on my website, so it'll be fun to hit a few of them here. All right, so why don't I give you kind of a common one, which is, what is the best way to sexually arouse your partner? And I'd say this one is one of the more common ones.
Yeah, to sexually arouse your partner. You know, the best way to sexually arouse your partner is stop criticizing them.
That's great advice.
It seems like people say, well, I just say all kinds of insulting things. Usually people do it kind of passive-aggressively, you know.
That's true.
Yeah, I was just joking.
Right.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah, so some sort of...
They wonder why their anatomy isn't responding.
So positive communication rather than passive-aggressive negative communication. Is that what we're getting at here?
Yes, there's actually some research that shows that the relationships that last the most have got more appreciations, they call them.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, but more appreciations than criticisms.
So if you're appreciative of your partner, you're maybe more likely to sexually arouse them too?
I think so. At least, you know, it's an interesting thing. I have a lot of couples come to see me when their relationship's in trouble and they haven't had sex for several years and they're still trying to stay married or together for whatever
reason. How does that work out?
Well, I get them to start talking to each other compassionately because a lot of times they're not expressing their frustrations. They don't know how to listen to each other anymore. That when one begins to talk, the other one's like, yeah, I've already heard it all before. And that one simple thing of just learning how to listen, validate feelings, and show up for each other compassionately can turn their sex life around almost immediately. A lot of them will leave the office and go home and have the best sex they've had in 10 years.
That's great. What a great story.
What would your answer be to that?
Yeah, I think that the communication piece is for really just positive communication to listen to your partner. Obviously, it's hard to sexually arouse somebody if you don't know what arouses them. So for me, it's the communication aspect. I think everybody is aroused in somewhat different fashions. Some people are more visually aroused. Some people take longer than others. And unless you can sort of tease that out and have open communication, I think it's sometimes difficult to figure that out, from, especially when people are maybe have, you know, they've been abused in the past, or they're, you know, they're uncomfortable with their sexuality, or, you know, there's all sorts of things that you have to figure out how those work together.
That is true. Yeah, you know, so this whole research about marriages that last, successful marriages, and of course, you know, I think we can apply that to relationships.
Yeah, for sure.
Long-term relationships. It's Gottman Institute, John Gottman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they actually study these couples and go, like, how many times did they say something negative and how many times did they appreciate? And then did a study on how long their relationships lasted.
And that's a pretty good indicator by using that, basically, the ratio.
In their research, yeah, it was a very good indicator.
That's crazy, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so give us another one.
All right, here's another one. This was a crazy one. I thought you might think was amusing at the very least. What sort of plant leaves or branches are prickly but still safe to use for BDSM play?
I think we're talking about nettle. Are we talking about
nettle? Really?
Well,
like sting nettles?
Yeah. Okay. So that is, I'm out there. I'm sorry. I know people who use bees.
Really?
Sure.
Wow.
Doesn't sound like that's what you were talking about, and I'm glad. Okay, so what kind of plant?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have no idea. These are questions that I get from my readers, and I can't always interpret them. And so what sort of plant leaves or branches are prickly but still safe to use? I would say nettles is probably a good answer. You're going to get some stinging. I can't imagine that would feel very good, having played a lot around prickly nettles, stinging nettles when I was a kid. But I don't think they damage you in any way.
Well, there's a video. BDSM girl tortures herself with stinging nettles.
Oh, really? Well, you learn something new every day. I had no idea.
That's very interesting. BDSM lesbian stinging nettle torture.
So that might be it then. I couldn't come up with anything like, I could think of like holly branches. Those kind of have those like little pointy ends. But
it's got a great name. It's Cassadobotany.
Really?
Cassadobotany, use of nettles. There's a whole website here you can go to.
All right. I might have to write an article about that one then. I appreciate that.
What are stinging nettles? Are there different sorts of stinging nettles? How do they sting? Do all nettles sting the same? Are there any to be aware of? Blah, 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 blah. Cassadobotany.
Wow.
FQ.
All right.
BDSM, what is the value? How should the top handle the nettles? So that's a with chair, leather, or
yes, exactly. With gloves.
All right.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm on fire here. Bring me another one.
All right. here's one that may be a little more common. How can I make my erection last longer?
Oh. Well, short of using some kind of a numbing cream, which, of course, they sell over the counter. You can go to any sex shop, and they'll sell you some numbing cream.
Now, that's safe for intercourse, too, when you have a numbing cream that's doing
something?
I don't
really think it's a good idea, because
I wouldn't think so either.
Rub off on your partner, and then,
that doesn't sound good.
But here's one argument in favor of it. A lot of vaginal penetration, or any penetrative sex, a lot of times when it's vaginal or anal, it's pressure.
Yeah, totally.
If there was a little bit of numbing of the surface tissues, it probably would not really be that detrimental to the overall sexual satisfaction of the person being penetrated.
Yeah.
And of course, the whole idea of using the numbing cream for the person who's trying to sustain their erection is that they don't get too turned on. But, in this day of STDs and everything, I recommend safer sex, in which case a lot of times guys can just put a condom on.
That's a great idea.
That will cause them not to, come so quickly.
Yeah, that's a really good suggestion, definitely.
I think it's safer. It makes more sense, more logical than doing math or...
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure.
Whatever.
Yeah, and there's different techniques I know that people use in terms of like stopping themselves from ejaculating, but in terms of just lasting longer, I think
there
that's
is.
A really good suggestion.
Ultimately, the best thing is learning conscious breathing techniques. If you can play with the squeeze technique and all of that, the conscious breathing will help you learn how to ride those.
Basically, relaxing your body, essentially.
No. It's kind of a meditation technique. You can also learn this from Tantra. Yoga's great to learn too. And yoga, Tantra, meditation, they all teach conscious breathing techniques, and it helps you learn how to keep the energy in your body and increase the pleasure quotient. Without rushing towards that ejaculation or that orgasm. Lots of reasons to want to do that, because the orgasm is going to be more powerful when you finally do achieve it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And if your partner wants that to last longer, and if that is a more powerful orgasm, then obviously that's a benefit for both people. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Some people, I have another question here that's basically like, why does somebody want it to last so long? I don't want it to last that long, so it really does vary by the couple, doesn't it?
Well, and I'm gonna guess that it's a female who's not wanting it to last so long, but I don't know that's true.
That was my gut from reading the question the way it was written. I can't find it here because I got pages of them, but yeah.
Well, if in fact it was a female, it stands to reason. I think about 80% of women are not really enjoying sexual intercourse. It's something that they...
Really? That many?
Well, not having an orgasmic response.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, so it's kind of actually rare for women to enjoy.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense since their organ is on the exterior versus...
orgasm. Not true.
Not always, I guess. Okay.
No, there's so much about female anatomy that can be erotic. Inside of the vagina, you've got the female prostate, the G-spot, and the A-spot, also known as the anterior fornix erogenous zone, and then the tip of the cervix. These areas can be too sensitive for some women. They can be incredibly erotic for other women. Some women have erectile tissue behind the vaginal wall, so penetration can actually be arousing in that case as well. And then the other thing is that the clitoris, most of us are focused on the glands of the clitoris, but the clitoris actually has these legs, also known as
the
underside of the labia minora and all the way down to the vaginal entrance. So those, all of those areas are really meant to work together. To create a tremendous amount of arousal everywhere. And let's also forget about, like, the perennial sponge. There's a, mm-hmm. there's a little spongy tissue that's between the vaginal wall and the anal wall, or the rectal wall. So the perennial sponge is also flushable to pressure and touch. So
when you say 80%, you mean in sort of a single sort of penetration standpoint, or do you mean not enjoying sex in general?
Well, not achieving an orgasm during sexual intercourse.
I see. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, the study actually was that about 80% of women are faking orgasms. So, as far as, you know, whether or not they are never experiencing orgasm during intercourse, not necessarily, but it's they're having difficulty with orgasm from vaginal intercourse alone, and a lot of people are still doing that. They're just kind of like putting the penis inside the vagina and waiting for something miraculous to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry Winston is one of my favorite sex educators, and she actually says that until the vestibular bulbs are aroused, you should never put anything inside of a vagina. The vestibular bulbs are actually two little organs that lie just under the surface of the vulva, right directly below the glands of the clitoris and above the vaginal entrance. And mm-hmm. if those are stimulated, they start to become erect, and it creates a puffiness. So the woman's vulva becomes kind of puffy.
Mm-hmm.
And really, until she's puffy, you shouldn't be trying to put anything inside of her.
That's a good clarification.
I think women can enjoy intercourse, and I think there's lots of sensation all over the place. But unfortunately, we kind of got this porn mentality where we're rushing to have intercourse like the porn stars do, and that's not even how they do it when they get home.
Yeah, I find that a lot of times pornography is rather unattractive because of how unsexual it looks and how rushed, and it's difficult. For me,
what do you do with your students? Because I don't know if you've done surveys, but I know it's another state where I speak sometimes. They were coming up with a survey on campus of, say, 99% of the men were regularly viewing online porn, and 65% of the women were regularly viewing online
porn. I would say that's pretty accurate. I mean, even at the high school level, I would say that's fairly accurate. It's just so prevalent. It's so easy to get. And you talk about the percentage of data that's streaming on the web, and the percentage of websites isn't that high, but the percentage of data that's being, like, streamed on the web, it's you're talking maybe 25% of the information on the web is streamed pornography. So there's a huge base of consumers out there, and unfortunately, I think it leads to a lot of unhealthy ideas about sex.
Well, and I'm imagining that, you know, with your website and your access to younger minds, that you must be trying to, you know, kind of counterbalance that. And I'm wondering how you do that. What do you talk to your students about porn?
That's the goal, is to counterbalance it. I think it's difficult. I think that talking about the science side of it helps. Being a science teacher and talking about the other body systems before we talk about the vagina and the penis really helps, because they're like, oh, we're going to say those words. And I'm like, yeah, we said capillaries and we were talking about the lungs. What's your problem? And they're like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. So when you can kind of break it down and talk about it and say, these are scientific words. These are the body part names, and you need to understand how they work. I get to break some of that sort of stereotype around that sort of, oh, we can't talk about that. That's a dirty topic. That's, you know, that's the health unit. So that helps a little bit, but, you know, again, the science side of it is difficult because there's obviously not, you know, there's not statistical proof or science, you know, on a lot of this stuff. There's only research, you know, by a few people on certain select topics, and there's not a lot of money to be made by this scientific research. So it's difficult to tell them, you know, sort of this is how the science of it went and how to, you know, sex is about a lot more than getting off and porns show you.
And you're absolutely right. There's a lot of disagreement. You know, there are doctors out there that absolutely refuse to acknowledge female ejaculation or the G-spot, yet almost anybody who is leading an active sex life can tell you from personal experience that they exist. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to get accurate scientific information about sexuality that isn't somehow or another also kind of imbued with this overlay of, well, you know, we know how the human body makes up babies.
Yes, we know, exactly.
We know how it contracts disease.
Yep, that's what we're allowed to talk about right there.
Yep.
It's like, okay, but what about having a healthy sex life for the rest of your life? Because that has a lot more to do with a lot of other things besides those two things.
Yeah.
You know, and I got into it because I was teaching about, rocks. I was teaching about all sorts of different things, but like igneous and metamorphic rocks. And then I had a high school aide who came in, and she was like a junior. And I was like, we were supposed to have some abstinence speaker in the next week. And I was like, what have you learned about, sex ed in your, 6 years in this school and or in this district since middle school? And she was basically like, nothing. We've had this abstinence speaker come in. And I was like, oh, my God. So here I am teaching about metamorphic rocks, and this kid's never learned about sex. Like, that's not good. Because what are they going to use?
They're out there having it.
Yeah, they're going to be using their reproductive system. And even if they're not then, even if they're, this perfect kid who doesn't have sex, and parents are great until they go off to college or whatever, like, they're going to be doing that soon. And they're not going to be studying metamorphic rocks, most of them, but they will use their reproductive system. And I was like, I need to be covering this. Because it's such a big part of their lives. It's going to be who they are. It's going to be who they're in a relationship with. It's going to be, how they teach their kids. It's such a big part of people's lives.
It is. And it's such an important part, too.
It's a really important part.
I think it affects our health, both emotional and physical.
For sure.
And our creativity and our, desire to be, engaged with our environment and passion. I think it can cause us to be fully alive, or, when we're not being sexual, or, at least, I think, kind of like erotically empowered is one of the things I like to teach my clients.
That's a great phrase. I like that.
Yeah. It's you don't have to be having sex to feel sexy.
That's exactly right. And I think that people need to understand that there's different ways to be sexual, and some people have higher sex drives and some people have lower sex drives, and some people are going to feel sexy by wearing sexy clothes, and other people are going to feel, and that's all normal. And I think that's the thing that's difficult to express to people, and it's what I wanted to express by the book and a website and everything else, but it's a difficult message to get across.
Yeah, it is. Well, they're fighting against kind of that puritanical background of this country, especially.
Yeah, that, and but then the marketing is completely the opposite. Looking at ads today when I was out shopping, and I'm just like, everyone is like, the women are wearing these tiny little skirts, and it's just like the way it's really interesting the way we, sex isn't okay, but yet here, buy this product, we'll push it with sex.
Yeah. It's true. It's very true. Yeah.
Got to be really confusing for young people. Got to be really, really confusing.
I know. It's so funny because I'm a former sex worker, and people will go, well, what do you think about sex in the culture? And I'll be going, what sex? All I see is a bunch of angry people running around naked.
Yeah.
The porn looks angry,
Yeah, no. It's definitely true.
Yeah.
It's not... not a good model for what our youth should be looking forward to in their sex lives for the rest of their lives, whether it's be, a monogamous relationship or, they have different partners or whatever. It's not we're not setting up a good model for how these people can be happy, which is unfortunate, and that's difficult to watch sometimes.
Well, you're doing your part. Now tell us about the sex survey, because you got about 7,500 results from the survey.
Yeah, so about 7,500 people have taken that survey, and I'd like to do more with it. And it varies from, it's a great, because I've got it broken down into age categories too, and it's very interesting to see how it breaks down from, say, males that are 18 to 20 to, say, females that are 60 and over. Obviously, you're going to get different percentages of people that have participated. participated in various things. And the idea of the survey was taken from you. Actually, you might have even been in the same thing. It was with Charlie Glickman where we all filled out a survey. He said it was from Planned Parenthood, and I contacted him, and he's a great guy, and asked him, you know, can I use this? And he was like, oh, yeah, I took it from a Planned Parenthood thing, but, yeah, you can use it. So modified it just, I think, because I think there's a lot of questions. Like, when I tell people I'm working on this website, it's always like, well, is this normal? Am I normal? And it's like, oh, my gosh, the percentages are all over the board. Yes, you're normal.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so that was the goal of it. And it really has been interesting because I do have percentages down, you know, where, you know, 5% have received medical attention for some sort of sexual injury and, you know, 94% or something or about 90% have masturbated orgasms. So you have all the way from, you know, hardly ever done it to, you know, most of us have done it. And then you've got things in the middle that have, you know, let's say watch sex with pornography on 60%. And so there, it's all over the board, and it's basically just a way for people to, you know, fill out this survey and then at the end go, oh, wow, I am kind of normal.
Yeah, and that's really important. So important that people get that message that they're normal. I've had a lot of people come into my office, and all they really want to do is tell me all of their secrets, all their secrets.
And then to find out if they're normal and be like, am I okay?
Well, there's that, yes, like, am I normal and am I okay? And then there's also just the idea that they could talk about this stuff.
Oh, I see.
With somebody who does not.
Sure. It's not going to judge them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because they probably haven't been able to talk to anybody about that. Well, that's a great thing. You can let people be able to talk about that and stuff and know you're not going to judge them and give them healthy tips on being successful in this crazy desexual world we live in.
That's true. So this is very anonymous, and people can go over there and take the survey. If
yeah, correct. Yeah, it's listed at the top. It's also slash sex survey on the Sperm Brain website. It's anonymous, and I do compile the results, so you have to check a box that says you're willing to, you know, that this stuff be used for science. Because I am compiling it all, and I would like to do something with the data. And one of the most interesting questions I have at the end is just what, let's see if I can, actually I'm not going to be able to pull up the word for word. It's basically, what does sex mean to you? What does it mean to you? And that's, so it's a free write response. And I've gotten some really fascinating answers to that. I think that sex means so many different things to different people, and that's been kind of eye-opening to me.
Yeah. Do you have some of the answers of what sex means to people?
Might have to save in detail for another show, but they range from all over the board. Let me see if I can find a couple. A lot of them, you know, they relate to intimacy, or they relate to, some of them are purely physical. You know, this is what is important to me. You know, just sleeping well, or a release, or, you know, just making love with my partner. Just sort of generalize some of them. And some of them are really deep. They're really personal. They're really, you know, sex is a particular way of meeting with somebody, or a particular, but it's interesting. And some people, it's not a big deal. And other people, highly overrated, I think, was the one I read today that I thought was funny.
Highly overrated. Well, they need to come see me.
Exactly. So I was like, so people, you know, everybody has a different deal. And now, especially...
I get it, though. I mean, you know, I certainly know the first time I had sex, I thought, my God, it was the same night I had smoked a joint for the first time in my life. I was 17, had sexual intercourse and smoked a joint. The pot was...
That's quite a day.
Yes, it was. It was quite a day, and I liked the pot a lot better. I mean, I was just talking to a person who'd only had sex with, like, two people, and thought that meant, and it was bad sex, so they thought maybe, you know, there was something wrong with them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but you only have sex with two people.
Yeah.
So that's hardly time to give up on yourself.
Yeah, it can be. You're definitely changes over time when you have more experiences. And I was married very young and was in a relationship that struggled, and so it was interesting to get older and figure out that it could be so much different than just sort of clueless silliness.
Wow. Yeah, so you got married really, really young, huh?
Just was in a relationship really, really young, and then got married later on. I mean, I got married when I was probably 23 or something, but
yeah.
Had been in that relationship for 5 years, so that was pretty much, you know, that was
sure.
That was it. And so it's definitely interesting to look back and think, you know, gosh, I'd never learned anything. And that's the way most of our young people are. It's like, oh, well, learn by trial and error. Just go out there and give it a try. And I guess there has to be some of that, but there also does have to be some better education of, you know, of our youth, I would like to think.
What's your hopes for the book?
My hopes for the book is that it allows people to take sex as a little more lighthearted and also get a little better understanding of things. And also make it a fun read so that it's doable. Because I think a lot of the sex books out there that I struggle with, they're one of two things. They're like a girl's best guide to getting it on, or they're like medicalized to the point of nobody wants to read them.
Yeah, speaking of the guide to getting it on. What do you think about that book? It's actually kind of scary.
Paul's book? Is it Paul? Is that The Guide to Getting It On? Yeah, no, I love that book, actually. It's like an encyclopedia, and so I guess I shouldn't use that. I should use a different title, because actually I love that book. I was thinking of more of sort of some of these sort of more trashy sort of, this is how you arouse a guy book, as opposed to that one. So I should be careful with that. But just sort of, I do like that one. Do you like that one as well?
Oh, well, I actually helped edit the very first one.
Oh, you did. And when was that?
Yeah, so I'm very, very, very proud of Paul. And
you should be.
Mark that he has left because.
Oh my gosh,
really,
that's a big book.
It is a huge book, and it's hugely popular.
And it should
well
be. It's got a lot of resources in it, and it's great. And if everybody had something like that to go to when they were, you know, learning how things work, they'd be a lot better off.
Yeah. It's true. Plus, he does it with all of those beautiful, for lack of a better word, I'm going to call them cartoons. But
yes.
Yeah.
No, I think really, that's critical. I think that the visuals are awesome and definitely necessary. It's a little big. It's a little bigger than maybe some people would probably want to go and buy their bookshelf. But maybe now with e-books, it's perfect.
Yes. Well, you know, the great thing is sex doesn't seem to be a topic that gets old. So
that's true.
The world seems to be open to another book about sex.
Yeah, right. Well, 50 Shades of Grey is certainly taken the big jump this year. I haven't read it, but I've heard lots of people have. So,
yeah.
Do you have opinions on that book? Have you read it at all, or
which book?
The 50 Shades of Grey, the new romance, whatever.
I have no interest in reading it. I hear it's poorly written, and I know it's
I've heard that too.
Just, you know, sensation. This woman must just be, I don't even know how she's coping. I mean, she's kind of an unknown person in the UK and all that stuff.
Yeah.
She's very famous and in demand and probably one that she's going to write the second book about. But, yeah.
Okay.
I do have some comment about the popularity of it. Obviously, women are really, you know, excited about the idea of this being dominated by a man.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think that's really in line with a couple of things culturally. One is that, you know, women's role is changing now, where women are in much more high-powered roles.
Mm-hmm.
So as one's power increases in life, a lot of times the desire to surrender and give up power also increases. And we see this with a lot of CEOs and powerful businessmen who seek out the services of professional dominatrixes.
Yeah,
interesting. There's kind of a trend in that direction.
Hmm.
So, and it just seems like women are starting to, you know, show some of the same behaviors. If it becomes powerful, then they seem to be dominated. At least in fantasy. But I think the other thing there too is just this kind of, you know, so one thing, it looks like a new trend, and on the other hand, it also looks kind of a throwback to some old paradigms that a lot of us were raised with, where it's like Rhett Butler takes Scarlett O'Hara up the stairs, just frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn, and he's just, you know, she's like kicking and screaming and going no and doing it anyway.
Yeah.
So Meredith Shiver, the Canadian researcher who a couple of years back was on Oprah and also written up in the New York Times about what women really want, her research indicated that almost all the women surveyed had a fantasy of being overpowered by a man that they found attractive, who knew exactly what to say, when to do it, what to do. he needed to be psychic. And
good luck with that. Yeah.
But if it was psychic and gorgeous, then great. They'd love for him to, like, you know,
rip their clothes off.
Exactly.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And everybody else is going to jail for sexual harassment and attempted rape. But
yeah. My goodness.
So I think it's there are lots of healthy, consensual, safe ways to play with BDSM.
Mm-hmm.
And,
apparently, stinging nettles is one of them.
Apparently. I was looking at that website while you and I have been talking here, and it generally says don't use the stinging nettles around your face.
Oh, well, yeah. I wouldn't think you'd want to use them other places either, but I guess maybe. Those things hurt. Maybe I'm just a softy.
We don't have nettles down here in Northern California, but I grew up in Oregon, and we got plenty of them up there.
Yeah, Minnesota has plenty of them, and there's and Oregon. So, all right.
Speaking of sex, you know, in different locales, I'm just wondering, what do you find Oregon to be progressive or
their education in the schools is actually pretty progressive. They actually require sex education now, progressive, comprehensive sex education, which is one of the only states that really requires it and has pretty good protocol on how they do that. So that is good. How districts take that and what they do with it is still a little bit marginal. But I do think it's progressive in terms of the sexuality. I was out after coming home last week from our end of the year staff meeting, party, graduation thing, and there were between 15,000 and 30,000 naked bikers coming down through Portland that I had to wait with my car for an hour and a half behind. So sexuality in Portland is definitely definitely seen a little bit differently. Like, I was stunned. It was like an hour and a half of naked bikers. And it was, yeah, so they're a little more progressive here in Oregon.
Oh, my God. It's like they're becoming San Francisco.
It was a little bit like that, but we're a lot smaller and a lot more sort of a little lower lower key and slower pace, but yet everybody will get naked and go for a bike ride at 10 o'clock at night naked. So, yeah, it's a good place to live. Obviously, there's still improvements that need to be made, and we still need to be teaching, doing a better job of teaching it, but it's a difficult topic.
Well, it is a difficult topic, but, you know, I'm really glad that people like you are chipping away at that sexual shame, because it's so important. You know, I think the world would be a more peaceful place. I got a question for you. Do you think
all
there's any connections between sexuality and violence? And if so, what would you say it was?
Sexuality and violence?
Yeah, any connection? And that, you know,
there's definitely some connections in terms of. And I don't know how exactly, but I do feel like there's definitely a connection with sort of people who have struggled sexually or been abused or lots of different things. Obviously you can't play that for everybody, but I do think there's a sexual repression thing that can turn into violence and can be related to that. That's an interesting look. I don't know what the biological answer to that is, but it seems to me there's some sort of parallel.
Well, and I do think that I agree with the idea that when sex being a natural part of being, you know, alive on this planet,
yeah,
when it's repressed, especially when it's terribly repressed, mm-hmm. that I think it does come out in some really destructive ways, such as pedophilia,
yeah,
and rape, and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, repressed or mishandled, misused, you know, taken advantage of, you've been abused or you've been, I think that can also create the same sort of anger and the same sort of frustration of being violated or being not understood why this happened to you. And so I could see that side of it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. Well, you want to look at our time, click away here, and I've had a heck of a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the Q&A session we did together. I wonder if there's anything you want to tell our listeners about the sex survey, spermbrain.com, how to contact you, and where they're going to be able to find your book.
Thanks so much, Veronica. The website, spermbrain.com, you can go there. There is the blog you can sign up for, which I'd love to have you write on, and I think I sent you a login, so Veronica, love to have her have you as a writer on there as well. We've got about half a dozen people that are writing, which is fun. And then the survey's on there. You can click to that. You can take that. You can see the results, and I'm continually posting more results. I also have a Facebook page that you can link through to there, which has 800 or so people that follow that. And so a variety of different ways you can keep in touch with what I'm doing and writing about. And we'll eventually get that book published and get in there. So just trying to enlighten people a little bit about the science of sex and make some connections along the way.
Very cool. John, I really enjoyed having you in the Shame Free Zone. We'll have you back when your book is ready to be released.
That'd be great. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. well, listeners, I want to let you know I am actually going to be taking a little bit of a break next Monday. I'll probably treat you to one of the oldies but goodies. But I'll be back on the 9th of July, and my guest that day is going to be, or that evening, I should say, is actually going to be Heidi Thompson. She's the author of Calm, Focused Joy, The Power of Breath Awareness, and it's a book for children. We're going to be talking about breath awareness, this conscious breathing thing we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I'm going to have to listen in. That sounds great.
How to teach that to children.
Excellent.
And meanwhile, I want to make sure that you all join me at the EcoSex Symposium, which is taking place this weekend. I'm going to be there Friday night when the festivities start. We're actually going to be at the Clinton Street Theater, which is at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland, Oregon. And that starts, it actually goes from about 6:30 to 8:30. And then again, I will be back on Saturday. I'm teaching a class from 5 to 6:30 at the Q Center, which is over at 4115 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland, Oregon. And if you want to join us for the EcoSex Ball, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be at Portland State University's University Place Conference Center, which is at 310 Southwest Lincoln Street. And then on Sunday, I will be teaching another workshop. And that's going to be at the Q Center again, and that'll be from 1:30 to 3. Now, you get all the details just by going over to ecosex.org. That's www.ecosex.org. Go over to workshop descriptions and scroll down. You'll see my smiling face, and I'll be, I've got a workshop called A Child's First Love, Reconnecting with Your Love of the Mother and All Her Creatures. And then there's my second workshop, which is on Sunday, which is about nature's prescription for peace, which is why I posed that question to Sean tonight. Do you think sex and nature or peace have anything to do with each other? So, hope to see you all in Portland this weekend, and be sure and tune back in. We will have a program playing this coming Monday, and then we'll be live again on the night. Thanks so much for tuning in. Good night from the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you.